wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say.
You are listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project highlighting the voices of people impacted by the prison system. The Prison Voices Project airs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. on WGXC Hands On Community Radio 90.7 FM. If you are listening to the program and would like to share your story with the prison system, or you have ideas for the program, or you would like to get involved, please write to us at 704 Columbia Street, 2nd floor, Hudson, New York, 12534. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Prison Voices Project. I'm your host, Corey Fisher Hoffman, and I'm so grateful that you're listening today. Today's program is going to feature a full-length documentary called War Crimes that was produced for Current TV by Vanguard Documentary and narrated by the correspondent Kaj Larson. In this documentary, he covers the issues of veterans, so people returning specifically from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the post-traumatic stress disorder that many of those veterans are experiencing, and its correlation to violent crimes and the prison system. So in this documentary, you'll hear a number of issues covered, and I'm grateful and excited to share it with WGXC listeners and those who are tuned into the Prison Voices Project right now. And I also think that there are some limitations of the documentary. So I'll just come off and say that in this documentary, you'll hear about veterans who are accused of murdering their girlfriends. I think that there's not a thorough coverage of domestic violence and the relationship between the military and sexual assault, which is starting to become a much more public issue. And I also think that the documentary is weak on really addressing the connections between poverty and who gets incarcerated, as well as poverty and how people choose to, or why people choose to enroll in the armed forces. So those are some of the weaker connections here. And of course, this overall questioning of the wars themselves, the war on terror, who's benefiting and whose interests are truly at heart through these occupations and invasions. So these are some of the weaknesses. But with that being said, I think this documentary is still really worth sharing for addressing some of the larger issues of post-traumatic stress disorder, something that is starting to get more media attention, but really still needs to be covered a lot more. And so when I started to do some research on how to make this connection between veterans, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the prison system, I actually found very little media produced out there. And I did find this one documentary and felt like it covered a lot of important themes. So I wanted to share it with you all today. And I wanted to give a special shout out to Larry, who wrote a letter to the Prison Voices Project, shared his story as a veteran, and asked for there to be more coverage of issues related to veterans and incarceration. So, Larry, this program is for you and any other people who are out there listening in any of the correctional facilities within range. There are many veterans who are currently incarcerated in the United States. And just as the 4th of July passed and the fireworks were going off, I had a moment of really thinking about people who have returned from Iraq and Afghanistan, or people who have survived war zones who are surrounded by fireworks, and how that might be triggering post-traumatic stress disorder. And that sent me really thinking about this relationship between post-traumatic stress disorder, coming home from war, and the prison system. And so here's a sort of 4th of July special following up on all those fireworks by the Prison Voices Project. I'm Corey Fisher Hoffman, and you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. Here is War Crimes, narrated by Kaj Larson.
Not long ago, one out of every five prisoners in America was a Vietnam vet. More and more, veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are showing up behind bars. And many are being charged with violent crime.
Well, this is as big as it gets. It's a death penalty case. And if they find me guilty, I'm eligible to be sentenced to death.
Experts are saying that there's a common thread that often runs through these cases. Post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD.
PTSD exhibits itself in overreaction. You see a threat, you point your weapon in that direction, kill the threat. Do it now or you'll die.
The next thing I know, I'm coming to in county jail, not having a clue as to what happened.
Increasingly, post-traumatic stress is taking center stage across the country, in our jails and in our courthouses. Of the veterans that you've defended, how many of those cases were PTSD related?
Every one of them.
It's believed that hundreds of thousands of recent vets are suffering from PTSD. But what's making some snap?
I mean, it happened real fast. I mean, he came at me and bullets started flying.
And what is being done to combat what many see as an approaching storm?
The biggest problem is nobody tracks how big this problem really is.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how prepared is the American criminal justice system?
Minus 10.
This is the story of soldiers, traumatized by war, accused of bringing the violence back home.
Would you be sitting here in stripes if it wasn't for PTSD?
In Phoenix, Arizona, this is the Maricopa County 4th Avenue Jail.
Identification is completed.
This is actually one of the most high-tech jails in America. There's no actual buttons in the elevator. You gotta wait for one of the cameras to spot you. Four, please. You just let them know where you want to go. And then the eye in the sky puts you there.
There are about 10,000 prisoners in the Maricopa County system. Most are being held for small misdemeanors. The 70 men in this unit are charged with violent crimes like armed robbery, rape, and assault. A handful are accused of murder, and we're here to visit one of them. Clark Fish is 24. He spends the majority of his days locked in a 6x14 cell.
We basically live in a bathroom, you know, a bunk bed with a bathroom. You know, this is where you wash your teeth, wash your clothes.
Clark passes the time by prepping for his defense, exercising, and decorating his body.
I got to breathe. You know, keep breathing, you know, keep breathing, keep going. It's not as hard as you think, you know. Don't panic, don't, you know, just chill out, relax, and breathe.
And nobody's listening?
Yeah, I actually got that because it was at the point in my case where it's like kind of a standstill. You know, I kind of lost hope because nobody was listening to me. I said, you know what, the hell it is. And then I spent my entire life trapped in a cage. It's ironic that, you know, that this could become my life.
Clark is here because he's been arrested and charged with the murder of his girlfriend. He maintains his innocence. In the 2.5 years Clark has been here awaiting trial, he's developed the habit of meticulously organizing his cell.
Do you fold your socks like this from the Army?
Yeah.
You can take the boy out of the Army, but you can't take the Army out of the boy?
Yeah.
As a veteran myself, I could tell Clark had served in the military by the way he folded his socks. But there was something else I thought I recognized in Clark, too. Something less obvious.
Well, it used to be pretty intense when I first got in here. Sometimes the environment of Iraq, when, you know, it gets dusty over there, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of smells came to me.
Clark is suffering from PTSD. He was diagnosed with the condition after a 6-month deployment to Iraq.
I'd have dreams, I'd have nightmares, you know, and I'd wake up with my heart beating in my chest, constantly alert, always looking over my shoulder, very gun shy. I was never gun shy before all this.
According to a 2009 study, of those who have served in Iraq, as many as 35% of them, 770,000 men and women in total, may have post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. In the entire time Clark has been in this jail, he's never once seen direct sunlight. It's a far cry from the blazing heat of Iraq. In the spring of 2006, Clark flew into Balad Air Base, about 70 kilometers north of Baghdad. Clark says he began volunteering at the Air Force Hospital, where he was witness to a steady parade of carnage.
The very first thing I saw was his Marine, and he was messed up. He wasn't alert, but he was conscious to pain. He could feel pain. And the doctors were drilling holes into his skull. And they said, she said it's really going to hurt him, and hold his hand. And I guess it hurt him because his hand clenched onto mine.
Clark told me that eventually, the first patient he saw in Iraq died of his wounds.
Things come back to haunt you, just like ghosts do. And what comes back to haunt you is not what you did, but what you didn't do.
Somebody is in there. Randy, we get a doctor.
Clark returned from Iraq in October 2006, haunted by the gruesome scenes of a wartime emergency room.
These pictures are the typical new GI.
He looks young.
Yeah, that was he was. He's still young. And you don't see the sunken eyes the jail has caused and the darkness around his eyes.
Clark's father says that when Clark first returned from Iraq, everything seemed okay, at least on the surface.
At first, it was joyous. He was glad to be back. He had focus. It was good, all good. But it rapidly went south.
After that point in time, the PTSD, you know, it crept in, and I started to recluse, and I started to shut people out of my life.
Just a few months after returning, Clark got kicked out of the Army for smoking pot. According to his father, Clark's PTSD worsened.
He started talking more and more about how he felt that he had abandoned his friends and company in Iraq, and that he should be there. And I think it was about the time of those conversations that the drinking started to become obvious.
For some people, PTSD is, it's an atom bomb, and it just goes off. And for me, PTSD was that seed of corruption that grew within me.
Even as his self-medication spiraled out of control, Clark managed to land a job at an animal hospital. It was a convenient place, it turned out, to score drugs. It was there that Clark met Dr. Elizabeth Friedel. The two began dating and quickly formed a toxic relationship.
She was a doctor, so she could write prescriptions, and that's where the drugs kept flying in.
6 months later, Elizabeth was dead. Clark was charged with her murder, accused of strangling her following a late-night argument.
This is as big as it gets. It's a death penalty case. If they find me guilty, which they shouldn't, but if they find me guilty, I'm eligible to be sentenced to death.
Clark's defense claims Elizabeth died of cardiac arrest, possibly a result of her lifestyle. Soon, a jury will decide whom to believe. A verdict is handed down in the case of Clark Fish. And we visit Colorado Springs, ground zero for PTSD and crime.
DUI? Fort Carson?
Officers, will you have out like on a standard Saturday night?
Well, there really is no standard for downtown. Tonight I have, we're going to go get that guy right there. This could be a white pickup truck, unknown make.
The weekend shifts are busy for the Colorado Springs Police Department. More than 30,000 military personnel are stationed nearby, most of them at the area's largest base, Fort Carson. Come Saturday night, soldiers pour into downtown to blow off steam and drink heavily.
I think it's pretty typical. You know, if you were in Austin, Texas, we'd be talking about the 40,000 students that are down on 6th Street. Here, you know, we have five military installations.
Of course, the difference being that 40,000 college students in Austin, Texas, haven't done combat deployments to Iraq, right?
Yeah, that would certainly be unique to this population here.
029, your case number
120. DUI? Yep. Fort Carson?
Yep.
While DUIs and bar fights are common, over the last few years, as reported in the local media, a string of unusually violent incidents involving Fort Carson soldiers have made this area ground zero for those exploring the potential link between PTSD and violent crime.
Two Iraq war veterans from Fort Carson are now accused of killing another.
Tonight, a soldier is under arrest in Colorado Springs, accused of beating another soldier to death.
14 soldiers from Fort Carson accused of violent crimes, including murder and assault.
Since the start of the Iraq War, 17 Fort Carson soldiers have been charged with murder or attempted murder.
No one had really looked at what was behind the murders, what was the experiences of these men. The Army's tacit suggestion was that in every bunch you get a couple bad apples. I really wanted to sit down with these guys and talk to them and find out if that was true.
Dave Phillips is a reporter for the Colorado Springs Gazette, who quietly mounted a six-month investigation into the motivating factors behind the murders.
So what is happening here in Colorado Springs?
There are several factors that could all be part of this. One, for the first time in a major conflict, we have an all-volunteer army. Is that somehow selecting people who are more likely to commit crimes later? We don't know. Two, in this conflict, if you are seriously wounded, you have only a 1 in 10 chance that you are going to die from those wounds. So you have more people coming back who have been through serious trauma. How does that affect it? We don't know. The third thing, which is totally new ground, is we have a lot of soldiers coming back who are being put on multiple different kinds of mood-stabilizing antipsychotic drugs. How does that factor into all this? We don't know. What share do they all have in the violence? We're not sure.
Evans Hospital is the center for behavioral health on base and has been the focus of intense criticism after the string of Fort Carson murders. Army Colonel Jimmy Keenan runs the hospital.
When you think about those guys who were involved in all of those homicides, did the Army fail those guys or did they fail the Army?
To really point at one person, I don't think I can do that. But what I can say is that we've never been at war this long and had this type of intense conflict that our soldiers and families are facing. And so I really think we're in uncharted waters. The length of deployment that we're now having and the number of deployments that we're having, that truly had an effect on our soldiers.
Soldiers are officially screened for PTSD by filling out a 2-page Q&A form known as the WARCAT.
You just got back from deployment?
Yeah.
And where were you at?
In Iraq.
Okay.
Soldiers are asked if they're experiencing any of the symptoms most closely associated with PTSD. Flashbacks, nightmares, hypervigilance, or depression. But Dave Phillips says one of the main flaws of the WARCAT is that it only catches soldiers who willingly admit to having problems.
Almost all of these guys were very young infantry soldiers. They have gone through years of training that has convinced them that they are total badasses. And then at some point someone mentions to them, oh yeah, and you may have problems with PTSD, and if you do, make sure to get help. But within their culture, that's a really difficult sell.
Shayla McAteer is a Colorado Springs public defender who has seen more and more young veterans coming through her door. In recent years, she has represented three soldiers from Fort Carson, each accused of murder. One of them was Kenny Eastridge.
Kenny Eastridge goes and serves his first tour in Iraq and is exposed anywhere between 12 plus times to exploding devices. He comes home and picks up a menacing case that involved him taking a handgun and sticking it to the head of his girlfriend. Instead of the military at that point getting involved and saying, hey, there's a problem here, they redeploy him. Ultimately, what happens is he gets kicked out of the military. 4 days later, Kenny Eastridge is involved in a homicide.
McAteer says she's represented about 100 veterans in the past few years.
How many of those cases would you say were PTSD related?
Every one of them. Their combat experience had a huge impact on their behavior when they came home.
In 2002, 26 soldiers stationed at Fort Carson had been diagnosed with PTSD. By last year, that number had skyrocketed to more than 11,000.
Is it too simplistic to draw a correlation between post-traumatic stress disorder and crime?
If there's a criminal intent, usually you're at a point you have to decide between right and wrong. So you really have to look at each case individually and say, was there some other type of impairment where they could not reason? But with post-traumatic stress disorder, it doesn't impair your ability to determine right and wrong.
But 1,000 miles away in Oregon, a lawyer is arguing that combat trauma does in fact impair one's ability to determine right from wrong.
You are listening to a documentary called War Crimes. It's about the rise of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, among veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, and the connection to crime and the prison system. This documentary was produced for Current TV by Vanguard Documentaries and narrated by Kaj Larsen. You are listening on the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. And now a musical break. This is What Are You Fighting For by Phil Oakes.
Oh, you tell me that there's danger to this land you call your own. And you watch them build the war machines right beside your home. And you tell me that you're ready to go marching to the war. Oh, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Before you pack your rifle and sail across the sea, just think upon the southern part of land that you call free. Oh, there's many kinds of slavery, and we've found many more. Yes, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? And before you walk out on your job and answer to the call, just think about the millions who have no job at all. And the men who wait for handouts with their eyes upon the floor. I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Turn on your TV, turn it on so loud, and watch the fool a smiling there and tell me that you're proud. And listen to your radio, the noise it starts to pour. Oh, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Read your morning papers, read every single line, and tell me if you can believe that simple world you find. Read every slanted word till your eyes are getting sore. I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? And listen to your leaders, the ones that won the race, as they stand right there before you and lie into your face. If you ever try to buy them, you know what they stand for. I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? Put ragged clothes upon your back and sleep upon the ground, and tell police about your rights as they drag you down, and ask them as they lead you to some deserted door. Yes, I know you're set for fighting, but what are you fighting for? But the hardest thing I'll ask you, if you will only try, is take your children by their hands and look into their eyes. And there you'll see the answer you should have seen before. If you'll win the wars at home, there'll be no fighting anymore.
And now, here is War Crimes on the rise of PTSD among veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan and the connection to prisons and the criminal justice system. This documentary was produced for Current TV by Vanguard and narrated by Kaj Larson. You are listening to it on the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
We're here on the grounds of the Oregon State Hospital, and this institution's kind of steeped in legacy. It's over 100 years old. They filmed One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest here, which gives you an idea of what kind of place it is. In the past, they would have called it an asylum or an institution for the criminally insane. These days, it goes by a different name, but the principle is the same. It's got over 500 convicted criminals here who are GEI, guilty except insane.
Jesse Bratcher is a 27-year-old from a small town in central Oregon. Like Clark Fish and Kenny Eastridge, he's an Iraq War veteran who was charged with murder after returning home.
I never believed in my life that I'd ever be in jail or ever charged with a crime, let alone, you know, a pretty serious one.
In the winter of 2004, Jesse was serving in Iraq. Just a few months in, he watched his closest friend's Humvee get hit with an IED.
I remember that day like it was yesterday. The whole Humvee, in a split second, landed all that weight on his chest. It probably killed him instantly. And I remember thinking just before we headed out, that was supposed to be my position, you know, in the order of march that day.
A month after he watched his good friend bleed out on a street corner, Jesse's Humvee was hit at the same intersection. He emerged from the blast with no visible wounds, though later, doctors would diagnose him with severe post-traumatic stress disorder. After leaving Iraq, Jesse returned to his hometown, John Day, Oregon. The transition to civilian life was difficult for Jesse. He started spending his days patrolling the woods outside his house with a loaded AK-47. But Jesse started to spend less time in the woods after he met a girl named Selena.
Things were going good for us. You know, I found out she was pregnant, and I was excited, you know what I mean? Because to me, that was like the best and the biggest accomplishment that I could do personally. Some people might think Iraq is. I don't think so much, you know.
But Jesse's joy quickly turned to anger.
Maybe a month and a half had passed after we found out she was pregnant. And, you know, I'd found out that she'd been raped.
After Jesse returned from a trip to the Veterans Hospital, where he was getting treatment for his PTSD, Selena told him that she had been raped and that the baby might not be his.
We stayed up that whole night, and I was just, I don't know if what you would call it, I was just stewing. I was running on adrenaline.
Jesse and Selena took a long drive as a distraction. Jesse considered veering into oncoming traffic and killing both himself and Selena. The next morning, Jesse bought a handgun. They then drove to the home of Jose Ceja Medina. the man Selena says raped her.
Basically, what we know happened is Jesse drove over here with his girlfriend. He came out. Confrontation started right on the porch there and continues on out into the front yard here.
I asked him if he had ever been around her, and he denies it, and she tells him he's a liar and says, "You rape me, you rape me." And he thought shoving me would be the answer. And, you know, I tried to leave the yard in the situation. And, you know, he came at me and bullets started flying.
Jesse emptied the entire magazine. Six of the bullets hit Medina.
How many murders a year do you get in John Day?
We don't. It's how many a decade do we get, and not very many. I think this is the first murder trial they've had in 20 years, something like that.
Mark Husario represented Jesse Bratcher during his trial. He is one of the area's few defense lawyers and the only one who had ever tried a murder case before.
Was this big news? Did it impact the town?
Oh, yes. A lot of speculation on whether he was using PTSD as an excuse. There was just a lot of speculation.
Marku based his defense case on the premise that Jesse's PTSD had made him insane. It would be one of the first times anyone had ever used this defense in the case of an Iraq war vet.
The main thing that PTSD exhibits itself in is overreaction to misperceived threats. You know, if you're in fight or flight mode all the time, your brain is rewired completely differently. And the training that he got in the Army, you don't have time to think. You see a threat, you point your weapon in that direction, empty it, eliminate it, kill the threat, do it now or you'll die. So, here he had this argument with Mr. Medina. He got shoved. That's a major threat. What do you do with threats? You kill it.
You remember shooting him?
I remember seeing him get shot. I mean, it happened real fast. I don't want to say a blur because it wasn't quite that fast, but it happened pretty fast. It probably didn't take more than 25 seconds. You know what I mean?
There's no questioning the combat injury of a leg or an arm. But the scars of PTSD are invisible wounds. In the courtroom, the validity of a PTSD diagnosis is often questioned.
Ryan Jocelyn, nice to meet you.
Ryan Jocelyn, the DA, argued Jesse had exaggerated his symptoms and that his Army experience should never have been at the center of the trial.
Do you think PTSD was an element of this crime at all?
I think the murder was premeditated. I certainly think he has mental health issues. Frankly, he may well have PTSD, but at the time he acted, I think he knew what he was doing, so I don't think it was the result of his PTSD, perhaps. But again, I didn't get to decide the case. The jury made that determination.
So this is it?
This is it.
Was the courtroom full?
The final day it was packed.
And what did you think was going to happen?
I expected that he would be found guilty but insane. Yeah, I expected that.
In the end, the jury's decision of guilty except insane meant that Jesse would be sent to live indefinitely in the Oregon State Hospital, where the Iraq War vet finds himself today.
You said this was a Shakespearean tragedy, is that
it
right?
It is, yes. Well, look at the elements. We have war, madness, love, sex. You know, it ends like all Shakespearean tragedies. Everybody loses. Everybody.
Would you be sitting here in stripes if it wasn't for PTSD?
No, I wouldn't.
Clark Fish, who was charged with the murder of his girlfriend in Arizona, is in the middle of a death penalty trial.
All rise for the jury.
Clark's defense team have decided to take the opposite approach of Jesse Bratcher's attorney. They're avoiding the issue of Clark's post-traumatic stress disorder, fearing it might make him seem like a more violent person.
What does the prosecution say happened?
They said I strangled her.
Based on what?
I mean, she's got bruises from when we moved in. And so they're trying to factor in some sort of domestic violence type thing, which, you know, maybe I caused some of the bruises when we're, you know, being aggressive with each other.
Previous signs of domestic abuse are a key component of the prosecution's case against Clark. The arrest report states that there were 16 domestic disturbance calls placed to 911 in the 6 months that Clark and his girlfriend lived together.
Has anybody ever posited that you killed Beth and just don't remember?
I posited that to this neuropsychologist who deals with a lot of veterans, and she says, I've had cases where guys have killed their wives in blackout episodes, or, you know, they've woken up in the middle of a blackout episode attacking somebody or whatever. She goes, so it's not unheard of. And I said, well, you know, that got into my, crept into my head, and I was like, well, man, I said, maybe that's what happened.
In Colorado Springs, another veteran from Iraq found no other explanation for what happened after a phone call with an Army buddy. A phone call he says he doesn't remember the end of.
I was conversing with a buddy of mine who I served in Iraq with. We're just talking, and that's the last thing I remember. The next thing I know is I'm coming to in an orange jumpsuit in county jail, charged with two felonies, and not having a clue as to what happened.
What Nick doesn't remember is attacking a parked car and kicking down the door of his neighbor's house. He was clearing houses, just like he was trained to do on the battlefield. Nick served 12 months in Iraq in a security convoy. He arrived in the middle of the surge. His convoy was hit with IEDs multiple times. Now, he's constantly on edge, hyper-vigilant, classic symptoms of PTSD. He says sometimes he's afraid to go to sleep because his PTSD could flare up again.
It's just being paranoid a lot, being always on guard, you know, driving down the road or whatever, you'll see things on the side of the road, and it automatically registers to you that that could be, you know, an IED of some sort. Picture yourself driving to work every day and having to go ahead and be aware of anything on the side of the road, cars next to you, cars passing you, when you go to the overpasses. Pretty much anything can go ahead and blow up.
For his crimes committed during the blackout, Nick would have served 3 to 5 years in prison if it wasn't for a new veterans court. 22 veterans courts, like this one in Colorado Springs, have opened in the U.S. over the past 2 years. They consider the defendant's military history and psychological issues alongside the specifics of the crime. Sentencing leans more on treatment than incarceration.
All rise. This report is back in session.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Shayla McAteer, the court's public defender, says the point is to get these men the treatment they need and to see that they don't reoffend.
I saw the pattern. I saw them self-medicate. I saw them drink themselves to oblivion. And so what you began to see was is that they're self-medicating and they're reoffending.
We should be concerned about these small crimes, right? The bar fights, the DUIs.
Sure.
Because those are an early warning sign.
The guys that ultimately end up committing the high-class felonies, so many of them had the red flags were there.
The veterans courts are in place to catch these vets when these red flags first appear. Time and time again, these young men show a series of warning signs, changes in behavior, substance abuse, and explosions of anger that can lead to criminal activity. For McAteer, the story of Kenny Eastridge is the cautionary tale that defines her work.
If we would have been involved and if we would have intervened way back when he picks up his first criminal case, Kenny Eastridge wouldn't be sitting in prison today. And he is one of the many soldiers that are in prison today that you can find that common thread on their stories and that common thread of where they got to where they are.
Let's say Veterans Court doesn't exist. What happens to these guys?
Worst case scenario is they end up committing multiple crimes that just escalate, and so they ultimately end up in prison for the rest of their lives.
At the Maricopa County Jail in Phoenix, Clark Fish's worst case scenario is execution. Day after day, he charts the trial on his cell wall, wondering if the jury will find him guilty of murder.
You are listening to a documentary called War Crimes. It's about the rise of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, among veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, and the connection to crime and the prison system. This documentary was produced for Current TV by Vanguard Documentaries and narrated by Kaj Larsen. You are listening on the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
Now, the change is of song is of people in a war situation.
I gotta get up where the guns never let up. Niggas die slow when the game gets sped up. Hope he's just a broke nigga, always getting wet up. So while they stay fed up and they smoke to keep their heads up, Bill and Ted only come around the gap, cause their excellent adventures don't involve getting shot. The box that catch rock, catching static from cops. The same second they try to set their foot on the block, they got them on lock, supplying the coke with a rock, tying their dreams to beans while the prison gets stocked. Stop, Geppetto got the ghetto rocking stilettos, lap dancing in an office, face down in some jello. Money green be the color hip, hop be the tempo, about 80 beats per minute, rocking you in your temple. Images everything, family saw their work be invisible. Both of the stones slang, but they're regarded as criminal. Some the dude got a day job they committed to, but deception be the drug every election's addicted to. Huh. My high school never had many computers, but they always have plenty military recruiters. Huh. My high school never had many computers, but they always have plenty military recruiters. I say ma, and y'all say city. Body more Baghdad, door for Philly. I say it's too, tell me how gritty. Pro class, bomb blast, coke cat, Kimmy. I say ma, y'all say city. Body more Baghdad, door for Philly. I say it's true, tell me how gritty. Pro class, bomb blast, cold cash, gimme. I say ma, you'll say city, 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 city. I spit fire like rebels in the dead of night, writing on that skyline, igniting the pipeline. The tripe of the time, the hype of the rhyme, and the less insight it takes to decipher my lines. I'm intelligent by design, so I define my freedom as an actor defined. All occupying forces extorting my resources and losses of lords, but I'm still a jack and a hackman and the people in charge. People in the West ask me why it's like that, and I say it's cause I got the right to fight back. Used to be a big believer in diplomacy, till I was staring down the barrel of your goals for me. Off you and your entire empire. I spit live wire, rap till your expire. My land, my oil, my plans. Not your puppet government or your stands. I seen Afghanistan's, you know, cowboy man. U.S. protecting contraband in his own land. No thanks, Sam. We got our own plan. We invented civilization and we'll do it again. Troops out, now Iraq for Iraqis. My people are never bow to America's lackeys. Troops out, now Iraq for Iraqis. My people are never bow, we'll never bow. I say ma, you'll say city. Body more Baghdad, door for Philly. I say it's too, tell me how pretty. Pro class, bomb blast, coke cash, gimme. I say ma, you'll say city. Body more Baghdad, door for Philly. I say it's too, tell me how gritty. Pro class, bomb blast, coke cash, gimme. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under, going under, going under, huh. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under, going under, going under, huh.
Thank you.
You just heard My City by Son of None. And now here is War Crimes on the rise of PTSD among veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan and the connection to prisons and the criminal justice system. This documentary was produced for Current TV by Vanguard and narrated by Kaj Larson. You are listening to it on the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
During his trial every morning, Clark is transported along with a host of other prisoners from the jail where they're incarcerated to the courts. And it's done underground in this series of tunnels, and it's his long walk to meet his fate.
Clark Fish is nearing the end of his trial. The jury is now in deliberations and will soon emerge to announce the verdict: guilty or innocent.
State versus Clark Andrew Fish.
Clark Fish is not alone. But just how many others like him, veterans of the long-standing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, are now entangled in the justice system? Nobody seems to know.
You could call up the Department of Corrections and ask them how many Iraq War veterans are in their prisons right now. They would have no idea. The biggest problem is that nobody tracks how big this problem really is.
Dr. Bud Brown is a criminologist who studies trends in the veteran population.
On average, I get 10 to 15 calls per week asking if I'm available for cases.
Dr. Brown testified for the defense in Jesse Bratcher's trial about his belief that there is, in fact, a direct correlation between veterans with PTSD and violent crime.
There was a point where one in five people within the nation's jails were Vietnam veterans.
Right.
I mean, so that's a pretty significant
right.
statistic.
That's going to be worse. That will be worse.
In 2008, the New York Times found 121 veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan who had been charged with murder. We expanded on the Times research and found that an additional 44 veterans had been charged with murder since that original report, bringing the total since the start of the two wars to 165. But reporter Dave Phillips believes these figures are just the tip of the iceberg.
Let's say you're a soldier home from Iraq, and you start displaying some of the problems that are associated with PTSD, you know, anger, substance abuse, and let's say you get kicked out of the army, and you go home to, you know, wherever you came from, and you commit your crime there. We never hear about it.
Clark Fish, who was charged with murdering his girlfriend in 2007, a year after being discharged from the army, doesn't show up in the New York Times study. The mere blurb in the local news made no mention of Clark's vet status, let alone the fact that he had been diagnosed with PTSD. After 2 days of deliberations, the jury has delivered their verdict in the case of Clark Fish.
When the bailiff read the verdict, it hit me really solid, but at the same time, it wasn't a surprise. And it's still, I know it's not a joke, but it feels to me so silly and just not proper, unfair, like something went wrong.
The jury found Clark Fish guilty of first-degree murder. Clark still maintains that he's innocent. He now faces the sentencing phase of his trial, where jurors will decide Clark's future, life in prison or death.
The first time I cried in this almost 2.5 years in jail was on the ride back to jail on the bus after the conviction. It was just a simple teardrop or two of, you know, not necessarily what have I done, but just I've never had so much weight on my heart. When we first started this process, I said, you know, if they find me guilty of first-degree murder, then they've already failed. So I don't care if they give me a death penalty after that. You know, you're already taking my life away. But as we moved into the phase to where I'm actually standing face to face with my life, it becomes very scary.
At trial, Clark's lawyers chose not to introduce PTSD as part of their defense, arguing instead that their client was innocent. But now that the jury has found Clark guilty, those same lawyers, hoping to save Clark's life, will argue that the mental disorder was a mitigating factor in the murder. Whether a jury in Arizona, now weighing the death penalty, buys that argument remains to be seen. Pop culture these days is filled with stories of soldiers traumatized by war. Look no further than Grey's Anatomy, where character Dr. Owen Hunt is an Iraq War vet suffering from severe PTSD. On the show, Dr. Hunt nearly strangles his girlfriend during a PTSD-induced blackout. That's exactly what Clark Fish's lawyers are arguing happened in the real-life case of their client, who now faces the death penalty for the murder of his girlfriend. Dr. Cynthia Boyd, a neuropsychologist who specializes in treating post-combat veterans, took the stand on behalf of Clark and testified that in her experience, it's not uncommon to see someone with PTSD act out during a blackout.
His last recollection was that the victim was alive, and then the next morning he got up and that he found her dead. And he asked me, "Do you think I killed her?" So I wondered, could this be something that happened in his sleep that he just blacked out from, lost memory from?
While the defense now proposed PTSD as a partial explanation for the murder, the district attorney made the argument that Clark was exaggerating his symptoms, that maybe he didn't have PTSD at all. It remained to be seen who the jury would believe in Clark's case.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how prepared is the American criminal justice system to receive these veterans coming in?
Minus 10.
Though the majority will serve honorably and return without incident, criminologist Dr. Bud Brown believes vets from Iraq and Afghanistan could fare even worse than those returning from Vietnam. It's a sobering thought if you consider that, according to one study, half of all Vietnam vets with PTSD have been arrested or incarcerated at least once.
You know, what this young generation of people saw in Iraq and what they came home to is not unique to Colorado Springs, and I don't think we're really going to know how broad it is for a long time.
For his investigative reporting, Dave Phillips was named a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. He is now putting the finishing touches on a book about Kenny Eastridge and other soldiers involved in the murders at Fort Carson.
There's a lot of soldiers out there, and that, you know, including myself, that weren't prepared to be faced with certain life situations, you know. But throw PTSD in there and you got a really bad situation.
As for Jesse, he continues to spend his days at the Oregon State Hospital. His lawyer has complained that in the 6 months he has been there, he has yet to receive proper treatment for his PTSD.
You just heard a documentary called War Crimes. It was about the rise of post-traumatic stress disorder among veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. It was produced for Current TV by Vanguard Documentaries and narrated by the correspondent Kaj Larson. You listened to this program on the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. As I mentioned at the beginning of this program, this is a special for the 4th of July, honoring the veterans out there. I was especially thinking about people as the fireworks were going off and wondering how that was impacting the many veterans who had returned with post-traumatic stress disorder. And so I wanted to do something on the connection between post-traumatic stress disorder of veterans and the prison system. And I found this documentary and thought that it was worth sharing. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I do have a few critiques. And those critiques of this documentary is that I think that some of the issues around domestic violence and patriarchy and aggressive behavior taught in the military and the correlation between that and domestic violence was not brought up in this documentary. So one of the people featured, for example, was accused of murdering his girlfriend. And I think the broader issue of domestic violence was not addressed in its full scope in this documentary. I also feel like the connection between poverty and war and crime was not addressed. So the relationship between those who enroll in the armed forces and the economic circumstances in which they're in and the options they have, and a similar relationship too between poverty and crime and what options do people have and how is poverty related to the prison system. I don't feel like those connections were made. And then, of course, this broader question about war and occupation, who is benefiting from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, who's not, how people are being impacted, who's in the countries that are being occupied. So, you know, documentaries can only do so much and focus on some things, but I think that those were some holes that I noticed and just wanted to share that. Maybe listeners out there, as you heard it, noticed some other holes. Well, I really appreciate you staying tuned and tuning in for this special, which followed the 4th of July and covered issues of soldiers and veterans with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and the correlation between violent crimes and prison. So thank you so much for tuning into the Prison Voices Project. And if you'd like to hear this show, you can go to the archives at wgxc.org and click on Archives, search for the Prison Voices Project. Thanks so much for tuning in. You have been listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project highlighting the voices of people impacted by the prison system. The Prison Voices Project airs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. on WGXC Hands-On Community Radio 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties. If you are listening to the program and would like to share your story, or you have ideas for the program, please write to us at 704 Columbia Street, second floor, Hudson, New York, 12534. If you have feedback about what you have just heard, you can email us at feedback@wgxc.org. Thanks for listening.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole